Gretchen, we are so excited. We are going on tour this fall, back on the road with Happier Hour with Gretchen and Elizabeth.
Woo!
Everyone can come see our disembodied voices live on stage.
Yeah, plus there's going to be slides. We don't get to show slides on the podcast, but we've got slides.
Visuals.
Yes.
Tickets are now on sale for San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, Chicago, and Kansas City, our hometown.
Woo. For Providence, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and Charlotte, tickets will go on sale the week of September 9th. You can get all the information, details, links to buy on GretchenRubin.com/events. And if you want to make sure you're notified when we're coming to your city and more information, sign up for my newsletter at GretchenRubin.com/newsletter. Yes, hashtag newsletter. I send out information to keep people notified.
Please come, bring your friends. We had so much fun meeting our podcast listeners at our live shows earlier this year. We can't wait to meet a whole lot more of you.
Yay! Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast where we discuss cutting-edge science, the wisdom of the ages, lessons from pop culture, and our own experiences about how to be happier. This week, we'll talk about why you might recreate a menu from your childhood, and we'll talk to the blockbuster best-selling writer, Rachel Hollis. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft, with whom I have shared many a childhood menu.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA. And Gretchen, I love Winstead's double cheeseburger, onion rings, and a skyscraper.
Yeah, it makes me happy just to think about Winstead's. Now, before we jump in, just remember, Happier Labor Day is coming up. Yes, we are going to be talking about all the things that we could do to be happier, healthier, more productive, and more creative at work using the Labor Day holiday, which is September 2nd this year in the United States, as a catalyst for reflection. And so we want to hear, what are you doing for Happier Labor Day?
Yeah. So everybody post your thoughts about Labor Day using the hashtag Happier Labor Day.
Yes.
And Gretch, I should point out in your book, Happier at Home, you write about how September is the other January.
Yes.
So it's a great time to look at what's going on in your life and get a fresh start.
Absolutely. And we want to hear what everybody's doing for Labor Day. And also, just as a plug for Happier at Home, if you are interested in things like time, possessions, neighborhood, family, Happier at Home is all about doing a happiness project, but starting in September. Because as you say, September is the other January. It has that feeling of a fresh start. And so a lot of times it's a good time to think big, start over. Fresh starts all around. Labor Day is the January 1st of the fall. So listen, this week our Try This at Home tip is so fun, which is to recreate a menu from childhood. And this is whether in your memory and you're just thinking about those foods, or whether in real life where you like go out and buy those food or make those foods, but to try to reconnect with the foods from your childhood.
Now, Gretchen, this sounds really fun because I love thinking about the food from our childhood, but what does it do to actually boost happiness?
Well, I think there's a couple things. First of all, it makes me feel happier to feel continuity with my past. I think for many people, and certainly for me, you feel sort of disengaged from the past, and there's a real pleasure in kind of revisiting childhood, but I find it like I cannot remember things very well. So I need kind of things to hook onto. And so I can't
triggers.
Yeah. I can't remember like, what was it like to be a kid? But then you're like, what did we have to eat when we were little? That kind of brings memories back. I need sort of a way in. And there is something about sensory memories, the way things smell, the way things tasted, that there's a particular vividness that really kind of brings back that time with a kind of a flood of emotions and a flood of sensation. And I think that makes us happier because it makes life right now feel more rich and more continuous with the past.
Well, that is true, Gretch. Like I can right now think about mom eating stewed tomatoes because she used to eat these canned tomatoes all the time. And she would eat them in this brown mixing bowl.
Oh, because
she would stand in front of the little black and white TV in the kitchen, and I think watching Julia Child. And I can right now thinking about that, it's like I'm back in that kitchen on Stratford seeing Mom.
It's so funny that you mentioned that brown mixing bowl, because I have thought many times, like, how when Mom and Dad bought that mixing bowl, did they really understand that they would be using that like 10 times a week for the rest of their lives? I mean, that is like the most used thing.
I think they still have it.
Yeah, oh, 100%. What I remember is, do you remember how we would eat Colby Longhorn cheese in those cylinders? It's like an orange kind of semi-soft cheese, and it would just be out on the counter and kind of get softer as the day went on. And we just kind of cut off a slice. It had this waxy exterior.
Yes.
I mean, cracked wheat bread, Pepperidge Farm cracked wheat, whole wheat bread with peanut butter. I ate every day for years.
I love that bread.
Love that bread.
One of my favorite memories from summer is Mom's BLTs.
Yeah.
She made the best BLTs, and I don't know how one BLT can be better than another, but Mom's are definitively the best on the planet.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what I remember is when we go on those long car trips to visit our grandparents in North Platte, Nebraska, it would be like we'd load up the car with like all kinds of special snacks and Ritz crackers, Cheez-Its crackers, and Triscuits. It was like, I think we usually only had two out of the three, but everybody had their kind of their favorites. And to this day, eating like Triscuits makes me, which I don't even eat Triscuits anymore, but just the thought of Triscuits makes me feel like I'm on a long car trip across the plains of Nebraska. It all comes back.
And the other thing is, Mom was such a good cook, Gretchen. Yes. Like, she made homemade pasta.
Yes.
I have so many memories of watching her spin that dough through those machines that cut the thing into strips. I don't cook, so I don't know what it is, but I have such a great memory of that.
Fasten onto the counter, and she would turn a crank, and it would flatten out and flatten out, and then it would eventually get cut into strips. No, it was a major thing.
Yeah, it was all day.
So there's the things that are homemade, which is like Mom's meatballs and the pasta she made, her pork chops. But then there's also kind of like the places we went. Like, we always went to Winstead's. We always went to Topsy's for slushes and cinnamon popcorn. And then Andre's at Christmas time. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, Gretchen. My absolute favorite sort of treat was when Mom would take me to Andre's for a Matterhorn pastry.
Yes. Or the gingerbread cookies. You know, I don't eat sugar anymore, but the one thing I do think about is the gingerbread cookies from Andre's. There's just something about the texture and that gingerbready. And then chocolate-covered graham crackers. Nobody eats chocolate-covered graham crackers anymore. This was like the major cookie of my childhood. They are so delicious. Like, why is not everybody eating chocolate-covered graham crackers all the time?
Another thing, Gretchen, that really brings our childhood back to me is Mario's Grinders.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And Jo Marie Scaglia, who ended up being a really good friend of mine, her family owned Mario's, and they had these meatball grinder sandwiches, and I absolutely loved them.
Yeah. Well, but sometimes, you know, you try to introduce people to the important foods of your childhood. I remember I took Jamie to Princess Garden when he came for like the first or second time when we were, you know, going to get married. And I was like, and now you will have crab rangoon, and which is basically deep fried cream cheese. And Jamie was like, what is up with crab rangoon? Like, I don't think this is Chinese food. And I was like, well, I just can't even explain it to you. You know, this is Princess Garden. Like, get with the program.
We had to leave Kansas City to find out that wasn't like a national thing. Although they do have it in other places. They call it cream cheese wontons.
I mean, just to say it is kind of to call it into question, you know, but we ate it throughout our childhood and we loved it.
And what's interesting, Gretchen, is the cultural elements of this, because of course, marrying Adam, who's Mexican-American, he introduced me to all these other food traditions. Like I've mentioned, tamales at Christmas.
Yeah.
So that's really fun. And also it's creating all these new food memories for Jack.
Yeah. No, it is really fun to think about how to introduce your own food memories to your children and how to incorporate new food memories and your sweetheart's food memories and other family members' food memories. It's just fun. It's a fun way to reconnect with the past.
But I want to eat it. That's the problem. Just thinking about it isn't enough.
Yeah. Let us know if you do try this at home and how recreating a childhood menu works for you, whether you actually eat the stuff or you just revisit it in your memory. And what are the foods of your childhood? Let us know on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Drop us an email at podcast@gretchenrubin.com. Or as always, you can go to the show notes for this episode. Go to happiercast.com/235.
Coming up, we've got a hack to prevent family conflicts. But first, this break. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Okay, Gretchen, it is time for this week's happiness hack. And this is a hack that will keep you from bickering with various family members.
Yes. So this is one of these hacks where you're like, does this even rise to the level of the hack since it's so obvious? But I have to say it was a major breakthrough for me. So in my family, there's this constant debate about whose phone charger belongs to whom. Oh, there's a phone charger in that outlet in the kitchen. Whose phone charger is that? Or like we're, you know, renting this house for the summer and it's like, there's this random outlet that nobody ever uses, but there's a, you know, somebody's phone charger's there. And you get into these whole chain of custody arguments about like whose is whose. And with earbuds, when since we all have AirPods, it's like they all look exactly alike. So I had what I thought was a brilliant idea. I got stickers. We had this giant sticker collection that we started like, you know, 20 years ago. And I got like a sticker of a book and a sticker of a heart and a sticker of a happy face and put it on my chargers and my AirPods so that I know which ones belong to me. And therefore, it's like, that is mine or that is not mine. And my problem is solved.
Yeah, Gretchen, I did the same thing with a Sharpie. I wrote Liz on my little AirPod case because when I plugged it in, I knew these were not going to be long, you know, for the world if I did not claim them as mine. Yes. But I'm going to go around and do that on all my chargers because this is something that happens constantly.
When it, you know, I hadn't thought about using a Sharpie, but like you could put your one word theme on your charger or your AirPod because again, like it would be another
way.
That's
a good idea.
Yeah. Or like a gratitude prompt or something. This would be good at the office too, because a lot of times like you'll be at a meeting and everybody will plug in kind of like in a conference room. And then you get into this whole thing where they're kind of interchangeable, but you do sort of want your own back.
Gretchen, what's funny is I've been working at Sarah's and I keep leaving my charger there. And then I'm texting her immediately like, that's my charger plugged in your office. Like, please bring it next time I see you. Because I'm just like, she's going to absorb my charger.
Yes. Well, another hack is have plenty of chargers so that, you know, you're not always just like so terrified. But I think it is really good to just have a way to distinguish yours. So this is in the category of little teensy tiny things, but that actually can solve a problem that can, you know, at least in my family, there was a lot of bickering about whose is whose and you took mine and why did you come into my room in the middle of the night and take my charger, et cetera. now we know.
Yay.
Yay. And now it's time for an interview with Rachel Hollis. We are so excited to be talking to Rachel today. Rachel Hollis is a phenomenon. She is a writer, podcaster, and speaker. Her books, Girl, Wash Your Face, and Girl, Stop Apologizing, have been giant, enormous bestsellers at the very top of the bestseller list.
She has a terrific podcast called Rise with Rachel Hollis. Gretchen, you were just on in episode 106, where she talks to people about how to make life better. And she also has a podcast called Rise Together, which she hosts with her husband, Dave Hollis, which is about relationships.
And not only that, she has a website with all kinds of great posts called The Chic Site. She has conferences. She has a TV special. She's married with four kids. So, Rachel, welcome.
Welcome, Rachel.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. It is always such a trip when you get to be a guest on a podcast that you've listened to 9 million times. So I feel like I am a third sister and I'm here for it and I'm excited.
When I've been on your podcast and I've listened to your podcast, so it is, it's like this very meta thing.
Worlds collide.
Worlds collide. That's so fun. Now, Rachel, there's something that I just sort of a big picture question that I want to ask, which is, you know, your work is just resonating. It's such a huge way with so many people. What do you think is resonating most with people? Like, if you had to put your finger on it, what do you think is capturing people's imagination and their attention?
I feel like this is just such a sort of generic answer, but I am in such close conversation with my community and I am in like, and have been for a decade. And so what's working or what's resonating is I am just answering questions or I am just creating content around the things that she's asking, the things that she's talking about, the things that I know she's struggling with because I'm hearing it at a book signing or in the comments on Instagram. And so it really is, we're kind of obsessive and have always been obsessive with the audience that we're creating for. And so, I mean, even with the book last year, everyone was like, how did you, I mean, there's no way I could have known it was going to do what it did, but honestly, it worked because the 20 lies were the 20 lies that I had been getting emails about for the last, you know, 10 years.
It's interesting because when I wrote Outer Order, Inner Calm, it was sort of the same thing. It was like, it was just something that people kept talking about. And I'm like, well, this is a big deal for me, but clearly it's a big deal for other people because it just keeps coming up all the time.
And you talk to so many women, Rachel. Is there one thing you feel like, oh, if only they could change this, then they could accomplish whatever goal they want to accomplish? Or do you feel like everybody's got different things standing in their way?
For me, all of this work was really rooted in the idea that I want women, whether they're, you know, 67 or 10, to understand that they are in control of their life and their choices. So much of my work now is based on the family and the childhood that I came out of really wishing that I could help the women in my family and not being able to. And if I had to pinpoint one thing, it's that it always felt like life was living them, not that they were living life. And so all of my work is how do I create tools? If it's a book or a podcast or a conference, how do I create tools that help her feel ownership, that help her feel like, even if it's just one small area of her life, that she can take control and do the work to make change?
You know, it's funny, Rachel, I know you're an upholder in the Four Tendencies Framework because we've talked about this on your podcast, so you're an upholder. And I feel like this is a very kind of upholder thing, which is you're like, if only people could keep their promises to themselves, if only they could develop the tools, how can I help people follow through for themselves? It's a very, because like for upholders, we feel that value so much. That kind of discipline is my freedom feeling that upholders feel. And that I think that's something that that upholders then are trying to help other people figure out how to do it for themselves.
Yes. I love you know, I'm obsessed with all of it, like the Enneagram and the Four Tendencies and anything that sort of gives you that insight. Even you just saying that, I'm like, oh, that is what I'm doing. I hadn't thought of it that way, but of course that's what I'm doing. Is this has been such an incredible tool in my life. Yeah. And if I could give it to other people, what a gift.
Yeah.
One thing I think is really useful, Rachel, is that you acknowledge that these things are hard. You're not just a cheerleader. You're saying, look, this is hard. And don't think it's just going to be fun to change your life or to build a business or to lose 20 pounds. It's not pleasant. And I personally appreciate that message.
Well, I think, you know, that messaging really started because so many women were sending me notes and talking about this, like almost an obsessive fear of failure. They're so afraid of getting it wrong. They're so afraid of, you know, oh, I tried. And if you dig deeper with them, you find that the perceived failure, you guys can't see me, I'm doing air quotes, but the perceived failure in their mind is that they tried something and it was hard, and that meant that they failed at it. And so that sort of those lessons and that kind of narrative of talking about how hard it was and talking about the struggle was, I wanted them to understand, hey guys, this is the only way I know of to get to where you want to be. If it was easy for other people, that's not the life I lived. Everything in my life, being a mom, being a wife, building a company, all of these things were difficult. And so I'm trying to normalize the struggle and hopefully make her, when she sort of comes up against the opposition or comes up against it being difficult, I hope that she can see it as, hey, this is life trying to make you strong enough for the goal you say you want to achieve. Like, I fundamentally believe that we sort of call our shot and we see the goal. We see like the top of the mountain and we're like, this is where I want to go. And I think that God or the universe, whatever you believe in, I feel like forces come together to be like, okay, you want to climb that mountain? You're going to have to run this gauntlet. You're going to have to walk through this valley. You're going to have to carry this load, because doing these things, these really hard things, and teaching yourself to stand back up, that's what's going to give you the strength to climb the mountain. But most people start off on the journey and it's difficult and they see that as a sign to give up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, nah, man, when it gets difficult, I must be on to something.
Mm-hmm. Well, a few minutes ago, you mentioned your childhood and growing up and wishing that you could help other members of your family. And I remember I was listening to an episode of the podcast that you do with your husband, Rise Together, and you mentioned how there are many family members that you basically don't have contact with. And I think for many people, a big happiness challenge is setting boundaries and sort of understanding when you can say, this is too much, or this isn't for me, or whatever. How did you think about that in your own life, drawing that kind of boundary within your family?
I honestly, what really made the change for me was having kids. Because when I was a child, I felt my life felt very out of control. When you're a little kid, you are, you know, at the whim of whatever your parents are going through or whatever's happening in your family. I didn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. And when I got married, it was sort of like, hey, in a perfect world, we wouldn't have to deal with these kinds of people, but they're your family and you got to love them. And then when I had my own children and I saw some of that negativity and that gross energy sort of coming into their sphere, it was like saber-toothed tiger. Like, absolutely not. I will not expose my children to this. And that gave me the strength to stand up to those family members. And it was a very kind but very firm conversation of, if you want to be part of our lives, these are the things that will happen in our home. If you come into our home, you're not allowed to drink until you're not allowed to get drunk. You're not allowed to cuss. You're not allowed to, just all of these things that as a child, I didn't have a choice in. And for some family members, they were, you know, not that it was an easy conversation, but they were respectful. And other people, you know, I grew up in a very like Southern family, very patriarchy, and like whatever grandpa wanted was the way, and you respect your elders. And so I definitely have family members who felt like it was disrespectful and I don't have a relationship with them. And that's okay, because my priority is the family that I've made now. And if you can't approach it in the right way, then I don't want you in our home.
So they felt like it was disrespectful because it was kind of like you trying to tell them what they could or couldn't do in their own behavior.
Yeah. In my family, it was very much a culture of you respect your elders. Whatever they were, however they were, it was a sign of respect that we just allowed them to be who they were. And so by saying to an older generation that they had to act in a certain way, they felt like that was very disrespectful.
And I'm curious if you think setting those boundaries, having those conversations sort of freed you to build the business you've built, like you needed to sort of take that control for yourself and then you were unleashed to just explode.
Well, I think with my family members, what it allowed me to do, those boundaries allowed me to build the kind of family that I wanted to build. It was sort of the first step that my husband and I took to, we're going to be the kind of parents that we want to be, not the kind of parents that our parents think we should be, which was a huge step for both of us. And the idea of building the business really came years later as I learned to one of the questions, I was taking the Four Tendencies test because I just want to make sure that I was accurate before we had this conversation.
As a true upholder would do, checking
I
your
know,
answer.
I knew it. I was checking my answer. But one of the questions was about being a people pleaser. And there was absolutely a time in my life where I was such a people pleaser. And there were plenty of family members who didn't like the fact that I was a working mom, because that is not the normal in our families. You know, men go to work and women stay home and take care of the kids. And I really struggled for years with feeling like I was the wrong kind of woman, feeling like I was the wrong kind of mom because no one in our family understood, and getting to a place where I could stand firm and be proud of myself and be proud of my work was a huge, I mean, it took years, but getting out of that mindset of needing to please everybody else was the freedom that every single thing that you can see in my career or my business today is because I finally found the courage to be myself.
So interesting. Now you work with your husband, Dave. What's that like?
It's something. So Dave was at Disney he came from the entertainment industry. He was a president at Disney Studios when he left his job. He was there for 17 years. And my company was growing like crazy. And I was really struggling with being both the CEO and the face of the brand. And I knew I needed help. And we had talked about it forever. And we finally just bit the bullet, decided to go big or go home. We left LA, moved our family to Austin, Texas. And in the last year, we have gone from 4 employees to 44 employees.
Oh my
which
gosh.
Is absolutely crazy.
That is.
Jesus, take the wheel. It's been amazing and super hard. Like, no joke, it's been super hard because you're with someone all day that you might have argued about, you know, the vision for the company. And then you go home at night and you're raising 4 kids. And, if it's been hard, but I would say honestly, you know, like when you're in a marriage and you have children, your marriage needs to be strong for your kids. Like if the marriage dissolves, it will hurt the children. And so sometimes you'll reach for a better marriage just because, hey, we want to keep the family and make sure everybody's okay. If you add to that, now there are 44 employees who are supporting their families, who are paying their bills because of the work that we're doing. Now you've even got to be doubly strong in your relationship. So it's been hard, but I would also say I feel like it's cut through the BS. Like, hey, we don't have time to fight over stupid things. Like, we've got to be really clear and really intentional about how we communicate, how we love and support each other. We've got to be strong for a bunch of people now, not just our children.
Well, it's interesting because we sort of represent a spectrum, because like my husband has nothing to do with what I do. He like is an infrastructure guy, and I work by myself except for what I do with Elizabeth. And Elizabeth has a husband that works in the same industry, but they don't work together. And she does have a writing partner. So she has like a long-term team. So she's sort of in the middle. And then you're double down on both, where your husband does the same thing that you do, and he is kind of your creative partner, your work partner, as well as your marriage partner.
I mean, I do think there's nothing like having a common goal, though, to bond people.
True.
Absolutely. And I think we both have a really strong shared vision for where we're going and what we're trying to build. It's not without problems. One of the first things I did when we decided to work together was I reached out to every couple that I knew that worked with their partner and just said, hey, what's the best advice you've got?
What's the best advice?
I heard it over and over, was every problem in that coupling always comes down to ego. So it's like you think like, hey, I'm the one who did this thing. And your partner's like, well, I'm the one who did this thing. And so everything really is about you getting the validation or you getting the credit. All the couples I talked to said that the biggest problems they had had in their working slash married relationship were ego based. And so from the jump, we both tried to be really mindful of, is this real or is this my ego talking? And most of the time, it was ego, especially for me. I mean, I had built, before we worked together, I had built this company for 14 years.
Right.
And I had this, I can say it now, but I really struggled with bringing him on board because I knew that the company was, I knew we were about to explode. You could feel it. Everything was going, like, I just knew all of this work is about to come to fruition. And I had this absolutely ego-based fear that he was going to come on board and everyone was going to say that the company exploded because he came on board. And I'm like, I've put in all this time and I've done all these things. And there was also honestly a part of it that was like, it's a man coming on board. And I was really proud of being a female founder and a female CEO. So just all of this stuff. And what actually helped me through that time was years ago, I got this marriage advice, and I don't remember who it was from, but I've always held on to it, of do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And for me, it was like, I want everyone to know that I did this thing and I want to be right. I want to be validated. It's like, or you can have the help that you need. You can have the partner that you need. You can build something strong. You can grow as leaders. You can grow as parents. Or you can let your ego get a pat on the back because you do this all on your own. You can play the martyr, but at least then everybody will know that it's your thing. And ultimately, man, I want to be happy. I don't want to be right. And so that helped me get my ego out of the way.
Now, we always ask every guest for a try this at home. And I bet you have many try this at homes you would suggest. But if you had to pick just one, what is a try this at home for our listeners? Something concrete and realistic that they can try tomorrow to be happier, healthier, more productive, more creative.
My biggest thing, and I feel like you've probably had someone answer this way before, is I am crazy about my morning routine.
Mm-hmm.
And not only me, but in the last year, I've had the opportunity to meet so many incredible high achievers, authors, CEOs, like everybody that I admire, everybody that who are doing these incredible, all of us have a morning routine, not the same morning routine, but all of us have developed a morning routine over time that really makes everything else possible. So for me, I'm all about doing something where you move your body, doing something where you learn. So you're listening to a podcast, you're reading a book, laying your intentions out for the day, and practicing gratitude. Those are like my four pillars of a killer morning routine. But at 7 days a week, if I'm in Europe, if I'm here in Austin, it doesn't matter. I am so hardcore about if you own the morning, you own the day.
And how long does that take you to run through those things?
So back when I first started, my morning routine was like 10 minutes because it was just a quick gratitude practice. Now it's 2 hours. But that's, I know it's crazy, but it's like I have four kids, I have 44 employees, I travel constantly. Those 2 hours are my time. Like and my morning routine is very slow. Like I'm slowly having a cup of coffee. I'm slowly reading a nonfiction book. I'm just because everything else is so fast paced. And that, like I sat out this morning on my back patio and had coffee and listened to the chickens as the sun rose. It was like the most Texas thing on the planet. But I was like, but it grounded me in this moment. Like I have a 2.5-year-old, man. As soon as she wakes up, I got to go. I'm sprinting. But those 2 hours, I wake up 4:30, 5 o'clock. And that's my time for me. And it's so sacred.
That is a wonderful idea. I love morning routines. Elizabeth, you have your cup of coffee. That is your precious morning routine too, I know.
Yes, I have to get up a half an hour before everyone else and have coffee and watch CNN. That's my routine.
That's a good
one. Maybe not as relaxing as sitting on a back porch.
I know.
Listening to the chickens.
Yes.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much. It's so fun always to talk to you, and we so appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys. Seriously, a pleasure.
Thanks, so Rachel.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We all know that our life and our health can be improved when we eat nourishing, healthy meals, but it can be hard to maintain. With Sunbasket Meal Kits, it's easy because they take care of the details. Sunbasket offers 18 chef-crafted, dietitian-approved recipes each week with options like Mediterranean, carb-conscious, vegetarian, and keto-friendly. The recipes are quick and easy to follow, and you can enjoy a meal full of organic produce and clean ingredients that's ready in 30 minutes or less.
Try mouthwatering Sunbasket dishes like salmon burgers with lemon dill mayo and seared squash, or steaks with chimichurri and harissa roasted sweet potatoes. My son Jack loves salmon, and he loves the Sunbasket salmon burgers. Go to sunbasket.com/happier today to get $45 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/happier to get $45 off your first box plus free shipping. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. Gretchen, you know, I love to socialize, but I need to do it in a way that's good for me, that doesn't drain my battery. And therapy can really help figure out what works for you, what doesn't work for you, so that you're not just spending out too much of your social energy.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GretchenRubin today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GretchenRubin.
Okay, Gretch, it is time for demerits and gold stars, and you are up this week with a happiness demerit.
Yeah, I give myself a demerit for during our trip, our family trip to Montana, which we do every summer. So, you know, Elizabeth, you were there last summer because it was the big milestone birthday celebration for our father and my father-in-law. And do you remember the bug bites that I got on my shoulder? It was like crazy.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
so
horrible.
Do I know that there are bugs that bite in Montana? Yes, I do. And did I go out in Montana one day and say, hey, who needs bug spray? I don't think I see any mosquitoes flying around. Yes, I did. And did I get bitten all over the place? 100%. And this is just a demerit because I knew perfectly well. And it wasn't even just people telling me. I had vivid memories of exactly the same time period a year ago where I got bitten up extraordinarily badly with mosquitoes. And yet I was like, I can't be bothered to go run and get the bug spray out of the bathroom. I mean, demerit.
This is like the sunscreen phenomenon, Gretchen, where how many times have I gone out in the sun and said, oh, I'm sure I won't get burned, even though science says otherwise.
Well, a friend of mine said that her doctor gave her a great test, which is unless you need a flashlight, you need sunscreen.
Well, that's good.
Well, I think I have
say that to Jack.
I think I have learned my bug spray lesson now. I do believe in bug spray. But Elizabeth, give us a gold star.
All right, Gretch, my gold star goes to a feature in Postmates. So I assume everyone's got Postmates. It's where you get food delivered, and there are other apps similar to it, and they might have the same feature, but I've been using Postmates. And you can time when they deliver the food. This is the gold star. I discovered this because we had a couple of families over this weekend, and, you know, I'm trying to entertain more, but it really stresses me out. And even though I don't cook, I just order food in, it just always stressed me out. Like, when do I order? And then everyone's there and I'm trying to get people drinks, but I have to like step away for 15 minutes and order and try to get what people want. And, you know, it's just like a whole production. So this weekend, I told people, like, we're ordering from this restaurant. What do you like? What requests do you have? If you don't have requests, that's fine. I'll just order. And then people texted me like what their kids like. And I ordered it all at like 10 a.m., set the delivery time for between 6:30 and 7. And then I never had to deal with it again. And it made my evening so much more pleasant. I cannot even tell you. I was just delighted.
Yeah. Because you didn't have to kind of monitor that and plan for that and be like, I should do it in 15 minutes and run around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And be like, Adam, help me find out what people want. You know, and it's just always such a production.
Yeah.
And what was nice is I could log on and see like, oh, they've picked up the food. They're on their way. So I knew to sort of be getting ready.
Right.
And I feel like it's a game changer for me. I'm very excited.
Well, I do give a gold star to you for having people over because that has been a major priority for you for a long time and you're making tremendous strides. And these are the kinds of things that as you do it, you learn and then it gets easier and easier the more you do it, which is what we always say to ourselves, that if we would just do it, we would do it more. And you and I keep reminding ourselves of that. But now you're actually doing it. So gold star.
Yes, I am in motion.
And that is it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home. Recreate a menu from your childhood. Let us know if you tried it and what was on your menu.
Thank you to our amazing guest, Rachel Hollis. Read her books and listen to her terrific podcast, Rise with Rachel Hollis. Thank you to our executive producer, Chuck Reed, our engineer, Bob Tabador, and everyone at Cadence 13. Get in touch. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Our email address is podcast@GretchenRubin.com.
If you like this show, please do be sure to tell a friend. Word of mouth helps us so much. And subscribe to us wherever you listen to your podcasts. The resources for this week, if you are giving a gift for a new mother or a mother who's entering a new stage in parenting, like their first child is just going to kindergarten or starting high school, like in my case, my daughter's going to high school for the first time, think about the Happiness Project One Sentence Journal for Mothers. It's where you write just one sentence a day, and it turns out one sentence a day brings back a lot of memories. You can go to GretchenRubin.com/shop to see more about that. And if you are looking for great books to read, follow me on Goodreads. Each week, I post what I read that week. I don't review it, but I don't always review it. But if I finished it, you know that I liked it. And while you're there, you can mark Outer Order, Inner Calm or any of my other books as want to read.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward. But listen, you know, we remember Mario's Grinders, but Eliza and Ellen remember Jo Marie's restaurant, The Mix, with all the salads and stuff.
I know. And she has the new one, Cafeteria, which I take Jack to every time we're in town. So,
all right. The Scaglia Dynasty.
Yeah.
From the Onward Project.